It's Thursday, October 6th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, U.S. voters watch as vice presidential candidates debate. Thailand sends home a Hong Kong democracy activist.
Mr. Guterres has really kind of charmed the member states from the beginning.
The United Nations is soon to have a new secretary general. Also ahead, a good day for financial markets and superstar musicians at the Super Bowl. It's all on today's International Edition. The two U.S. vice presidential contenders, Democrat Tim Kaine and Republican Mike Pence, met in their only debate Tuesday in Farmville, Virginia. Both men spent most of the time attacking the presidential candidates of the other party, Democrat Hillary Clinton and Republican Donald Trump, as we hear more from VOA national correspondent Jim Malone in Washington.
It was a rare moment in the spotlight for the two vice presidential contenders, Democrat and Virginia Senator Tim Kaine and his Republican opponent, Indiana Governor Mike Pence. After a friendly handshake, the debate quickly turned contentious as Kaine urged Pence to defend a series of controversial remarks made by Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump.
Donald Trump during this campaign has called Mexicans rapists and criminals. He's called women slobs, pigs, dogs, disgusting.
That brought a strong response from Pence.
He still wouldn't have a fraction of the insults that Hillary Clinton leveled when she said that half of our supporters were a basket of deplorables. That she said they were irredeemable.
Throughout the debate, the two men frequently interrupted one another, but for the most part, they also kept their cool. Pence and Kaine clashed over foreign policy, with Pence alleging that the U.S. has grown weaker under the leadership of President Barack Obama.
After traveling millions of miles as our Secretary of State, after being the architect of the foreign policy of this administration, America is less safe today.
For his part, Kaine took aim at some of Trump's foreign policy proposals, including on nuclear policy.
Donald Trump believes that the world will be safer if more nations have nuclear weapons. He said Saudi Arabia should get them, Japan should get them, Korea should get them.
Kaine also pointed to Trump's refusal to release his tax returns and recent revelations about the Republicans' business losses in the 1990s.
Governor Pence had to give Donald Trump his tax returns to show he was qualified to be vice president. Donald Trump must give the American public his tax returns to show that he's qualified to be president.
Pence tried to turn the tax issue to Trump's advantage.
Donald Trump is a businessman, not a career politician. He actually built a business. Those tax returns that came out publicly this week showed that he faced some pretty tough times 20 years ago.
The two men fought over terrorism, immigration, relations with Russia, and the economy. Historically, vice presidential debates have had little impact on the outcome of presidential elections, and the second Clinton-Trump debate comes in only 5 days. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
And as we have been through the entire process, the election campaign is right on our website, voanews.com. You can go there any time of the day or night and find out the very latest on the race for the White House. It's time now for our social media segment with International Edition's G. Abby Lee. And as usual, she's right here in Studio 22 with what's trending online. Hi, G.
Hi, Jim.
Well, let's begin with that vice presidential debate. Who won the debate last night?
Well, isn't that the money question people
yes.
want to know the answer to? So Twitter Moments, where you can see curated tweets about a trending topic, actually posted a poll asking the same question. Twitter users put Republican VP candidate Mike Pence as the winner at 54%. That means his Democratic counterpart received 46% of the Twitter votes. Some critics gave a clear victory to Pence, but many Democrats said his running mate Donald Trump was the ultimate loser, noting that Pence made policy remarks that are contradicting Trump's. But perhaps this is the most important tweet. It's from 538. VP debates don't move the polls much, even when they're pretty good debates. Hashtag VP debate. And of course, 538 is a website that focuses on opinion poll analysis, politics, economics, and sports blogging. And it's created by Nate Silver, a very well-known statistician and writer here in America.
Okay, well, what do the presidential candidates have to tweet about this debate?
You know, they are very big on Twitter. Trump tweeted, "Mike Pence won big. We should all be proud of Mike." And Hillary Clinton tweeted, "Lucky to have a partner like Tim Kaine who stood up for our shared vision tonight instead of trying to deny it."
Well, Trump focused, of course, on winning. Clinton emphasized her visions are more aligned. What else happens to be trending?
It's also related to the upcoming election, Jim. A renowned monthly magazine called The Atlantic endorsed a presidential candidate for the third time ever. And here is what its Washington bureau chief, Yoni Applebaum, tweeted. In 1860, The Atlantic endorsed Abraham Lincoln. In 1964, Lyndon B. Johnson over Barry Goldwater. Today, we endorse for the third time and attached a picture of the magazine that shows support for Clinton. That's all for me today, Jim.
Well, thanks for that great update, G. And we welcome questions and comments on our Twitter accounts. You can visit our International Edition Twitter stream at VOA_IE. I'm at VOA Stevenson, and G is at G Abby Lee. Among the top stories that are trending in Asia, U.S. military conducts airstrikes in troubled Afghan city. Anti-THAAD missile protesters rally in Seoul. Thailand to mark 40th anniversary of bloody 1976 massacre. Hong Kong democracy activist detained at Thailand airport. Bangladesh clears Canadian of restaurant attack charges. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and a whole lot more at the voanews.com website and also on our VOA mobile app if you have a smartphone. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. Thailand's military government sent Hong Kong democracy activist Joshua Wong back to the Chinese territory Wednesday after he entered the country to speak to university students about Hong Kong's 2014 Umbrella Movement democracy protests. Wong's supporters blame Beijing for the decision. A Thai foreign ministry spokesman said the permission for any foreigner to enter the country depends on various factors that must be in line with relevant immigration laws and regulations. China said it was aware of the situation, but declined to say whether it had asked Bangkok to detain Wong, who was sentenced to 80 hours of community service on a charge of unlawful assembly for his role in those 2014 democracy protests. Retired Hong Kong University professor Joseph Cheng tells VOA's Victor Beatty that he was not surprised by Wong's brief detention and eviction.
I think there is a general belief, a general expectation that student leaders from Hong Kong are being blocked from entering many Southeast Asian countries. They are listed as persona non grata, probably through the pressure of the Chinese authorities. And even the list, as well as the information of their arrival, have been provided by the Chinese authorities.
Does this suggest that Joshua Wong and other democracy activists have quite prominence that China is concerned about?
Yes. More the student leaders than normal mainstream pro-democracy activists, because the former are seen to be advocating the independence of Hong Kong, which is a more serious taboo in the eyes of Beijing than just the advocacy of democracy.
Of course, the Thai military has been quite busy suppressing its own student pro-democracy protests.
Yes, and that is why many authoritarian regimes or semi-authoritarian regimes in Southeast Asia are quite happy to cooperate, to respond to the request from the Chinese authorities, because they do not want to see student leaders being influenced by those from other places.
Does this indicate Thailand wishes to maintain good ties with Beijing?
Yes, because the economy, to some extent, is very much dependent on trade with Beijing, as well as investment flows from China, and increasingly the tourist flows from China as well. But even from the military government's point of view, they certainly do not want to encourage student activism.
What is the state of Hong Kong's democracy? Is it in jeopardy?
The pro-democracy movement is in a rather difficult kind of situation, mainly because it is in no position to achieve concrete breakthroughs in terms of serious improvements in the democratic electoral system.
Wong's brief detention came almost a year after Chinese-born Swedish national and a Hong Kong publisher disappeared in Thailand. He later resurfaced in China, one of a number of booksellers involved in selling titles critical of Chinese leaders. Portugal's former Prime Minister António Guterres has unofficially been selected as the next UN Secretary General. He is expected to be officially endorsed in the coming days. Following a decisive round of voting Wednesday in the UN Security Council, the veteran politician and diplomat prevailed with 13 votes in favor of his candidacy, none objecting, and 2 votes of no opinion. VOA UN correspondent Margaret Bashir says Guterres has been a favorite for the post.
If you look at the resumes of the candidates, he was a former prime minister and head of a major UN agency. So was Helen Clark, who was the former New Zealand prime minister and head of the UN Development Program, which has like a $5 billion budget. I mean, a huge agency, one of the biggest at the UN. But she never really made it into the top three. She kind of languished in the middle of the pack through all the polls. So people can have similar resumes, but at the end of the day, some of it comes down to politics. Some of it comes down to, you know, how they feel about you on a personal level. But Mr. Guterres has really kind of charmed the member states from the beginning.
Wednesday's round of informal straw polls was significant because, for the first time, the 5 permanent veto-wielding council members used color-coded ballots that signified vetoes of candidates. Guterres escaped the vetoes, and he received more than the minimum 9 votes needed to prevail. On Thursday, the council will be formalizing its decision in a vote, and after that, put the decision in a resolution. The council will then send its recommendation to the UN General Assembly, which is expected to rubber stamp the Guterres selection. Well, there's good news out in the financial markets, and good news always seems to inspire investors. So we check in with VOA financial correspondent Jill Malandrino for the latest from New York.
Stocks are higher after strong economic data boosted by financial stocks. The Institute of Supply Management showed activity in the U.S. services sector saw a big rebound in September after having slowed to more than a 6-year low in the previous month. A growing number of Fed officials have argued for a rate hike before the year ends. As conditions in the labor market improve, inflation inches toward the central bank's 2% target. Now, why are we seeing the financials get a bid? This is good for the sector because higher rates mean higher margins on the balance sheet. Traders are now pricing in a 65% chance of a rate hike in December, and that's according to the CME Group's FedWatch tool. So they're under the impression that we're going to get the hike. That's going to be good for banks. That's a big part of the S&P 500, and that's why we're seeing the uptrend in the markets today. Oil prices, also due to a much better than expected inventory report, that showed a massive drawdown in supply. Crude actually traded to $52. This is a level we have not seen since June.
No doubt a lot of people are tweeting about this. We like Twitter, and Twitter is actually in the news as far as finances.
Twitter's interesting to watch. It shot up nearly 4.5% after the Wall Street Journal reported it is expected to field bids this week. Now, takeover speculation has been in the marketplace essentially since the day Twitter IPO'd or the first day that it started trading. So it appears to be a matter of when versus if. Salesforce.com, Google, Disney, and AT&T, those companies have been named as potential suitors, which makes sense because they want the data. So what does this all mean for investors? Should investors run out and buy shares of Twitter? Here's a few takeaways and something you should keep in mind anytime takeover chatter hits the headlines. First, Twitter investors shouldn't count on anything. Without any official word from Twitter, these rumors are only speculation. In addition, even if Twitter is bought out, it's not clear what price the buyer would pay. So ultimately, investors should simply evaluate whether or not Twitter stock is worth its current share price of about $25, whether they get the buyout or not. Now, the stock IPO'd at $26. This is a level it has not seen in almost a year. So the marketplace is suggesting, outside of the takeover speculation, putting a bid in the stock, that perhaps it is not really worth this $25 level.
Well, it's our job to tweet out this information. Be sure to follow Jill at Jill Malandrino. My Twitter handle is at VOA Stevenson. And speaking of jobs, we have a jobs report coming our way.
Yeah, and you know what? This is interesting because the Fed is so data dependent. That's why the jobs report is key. And for the next couple of days, that's all you're going to hear traders talk about. Now, this morning, the ADP employment report added about 154,000 private sector jobs last month. That was down from 175,000 in August. It's the smallest increase since April. Now, this is why it's important. Analysts use ADP's data to get a better feel for the Labor Department's employment report, which will be released at 8:30 in the morning on Friday. Economists polled by MarketWatch, they expect the government's report for September to show that payrolls have accelerated a bit better than the prior month. Now, this is the key. ISM data was very strong this morning, as I mentioned before. If the jobs data on Friday morning is strong, that's a strong signal that the chance of a rate hike will happen at the December meeting.
We're always happy Jill Malandrino is on the job in New York. Jill, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And sticking with that Twitter theme for a second, follow our Twitter stream at @VOA_IE. And while you're online, check us out on Facebook at VOA Now. And of course, our website is voanews.com. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
The U.S. presidential election takes place on November 8, 2016. VOA provides extensive coverage of this important political event. Who are the candidates, and what are the issues that will determine who the next president will be? Tune in around the clock for coverage of the U.S. presidential election, right here on VOA.
Jazz America!
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all, from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. You know, of course, so much is coming up on the calendar. We have a presidential election here in the United States in just a couple of weeks. It'll be the new year before you know it, and then the Super Bowl. Grammy-winning superstar Taylor Swift will be headlining a concert in Houston, Texas, the night before the Super Bowl, the National Football League Championship, that, of course, in February. International Edition's David Byrd spoke with VOA Soul Lounge host Shauna Renee about the show, which in recent years has featured such stars as Katy Perry, Justin Timberlake, Jay-Z, and the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
And this will be the Saturday night event. So this will be the night before the Super Bowl. Of course, Super Bowl is the big football game that happens sort of like the football finals here in the U.S. But the halftime show generally attracts about 100 million viewers. So it's a huge get for any artist. And Taylor Swift has said in the past that she's always wanted to do the Super Bowl halftime show, but she has a major endorsement deal with Diet Coke, which is in direct competition with Pepsi, who sponsors the Super Bowl halftime show.
The Pepsi halftime show.
Exactly. So yeah, she was never able to do it. So she signed a multi-million dollar deal with AT&T, who will be essentially paying for this massive concert and a variety of other events. And my understanding is that there are also going to be some other programming around this concert. So this has the potential to maybe not be as big, but certainly huge for Taylor Swift in that weekend. And it's also, I think, an interesting deal because she, like Rihanna in the past with Samsung, like Drake in the past with Apple, is signing up with a telecom company. And we could at some point maybe see, hear music from Taylor being released on an AT&T platform. So, lover, hater, you've got to respect her hustle.
And, you know, the thing is, the Super Saturday Night is what this thing is called. This is quite a lexicon of people, or pantheon, I guess, is a better way of putting it, of people. Katy Perry, Justin Timberlake, Jay-Z, Kanye West, Red Hot Chili Peppers have all done this Saturday night show.
Right.
It's not the halftime show, but it's the next best thing. And if the NFL is smart, they're going to have some way of fans at home with their flat screen being able to dial up and see this.
Yeah, I'm almost certain that it will be live streamed at some point. So it needs to be. And if it is, of course, on VOA 1, we'll have clips from it for you on our social media platforms so that you can get a taste of Taylor Swift. Now, Taylor Swift has been on tour. She was on tour all last year. She knows how to work a stage. She's home here. So I think that she'll put on a great show. And it'll be interesting to see what she does in juxtaposition with Lady Gaga, who we also know can put on a great show and is going to have some guest appearances with her during her halftime show. And there's a lot of speculation about who and how and why and how big, really.
The mystery continues.
Well, I'm thinking Elton John. I just have to say that. I'm going to put it out there now. I think Elton John is going to make an appearance at the halftime
show. We have one vote for Elton John. I'll vote for Tony Bennett. That's right. Because they did the Lady is a Tramp great version.
Yes.
Shauna Renee, thank you so much. Are you a Swiftie? Are you a fan of Taylor Swift? Are you looking forward to this big concert? Have you maybe been to one of her shows during her world tour? Let us know. You can hit us up on Twitter. Shauna is at VOA Lady DJ. And you can find the Soul Lounge, that's Shauna's show, on our website, voanews.com.
Wow, the possibilities are intriguing. Who's going to be at the halftime show, the Super Bowl? You've been listening to International Edition. You can follow us at voanews.com, like us on Facebook at VOA Now, and of course, follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Carl Starling. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Gender equality has powerful potential to improve the economy, security, and the overall well-being of a population. If the world closed the gender gap in workforce participation, global gross domestic product would increase by $28 trillion by 2025. That's about a quarter of the world's current GDP and almost half of the world's current debt, said U.S. Ambassador-at-Large for Global Women's Issues Catherine Russell in a recent speech. She also noted that studies have found that countries with less gender inequality are more secure and peace agreements last longer when women are at the negotiating table. Nonetheless, no country in the world can boast that it has achieved full gender equality. Around the world, women are vastly underrepresented in politics and the workforce, particularly in leadership positions and other high-paying jobs, said Ambassador Russell. At the same time, women make up the bulk of the poor. I've heard people say that poverty has a female face, and that makes sense when you consider that women control just one-fifth of global wealth, said Ambassador Russell. World leaders are beginning to recognize that everyone benefits from advancing gender equality, she said. This is why gender equality is part of U.S. foreign policy. A key part of U.S. efforts focus on educating and empowering girls. In the past 18 months, the United States launched its global strategy to empower adolescent girls, as well as Let Girls Learn, which is a presidential initiative that focuses on educating girls. We are also working with numerous countries to dismantle barriers that keep women from inheriting or owning property, entering the formal job market, or accessing banking services. Gender equality sometimes looks like an impossible task, a pursuit without an end, said Ambassador Russell. But we can make progress, and that progress is worth making. Little by little, discussion by discussion, step by step, we can improve the lives of women and girls, men and boys, all around the world. And in doing so, we can reach our shared goals of peace, prosperity, and security.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.